you very much for tuning in to this episode of Words and Culture. I'm Christine Genier. Soko seni denit e.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin.
Soko seni denit e. Ninen yuji hina.
Eko se.
Kakawuddao. We'll see you again.
This is Bird Note. Rock climbing on Eagle Cliff in New Hampshire's Franconia Notch State Park requires perfect focus on the points of contact between climber and mountain, and keeping an eye out for peregrine falcons whipping by. These granite cliffs are important for peregrines. In fact, each year, popular climbing routes in the area close temporarily to give nesting falcons their space. Historically, peregrines bred throughout New Hampshire's White Mountains, but widespread use of the pesticide DDT caused them to disappear from the state and throughout eastern North America by the 1960s. Biologists released captive-raised peregrines, hoping to reestablish the species in the wild. In 1981, Eagle Cliff hosted a successful peregrine nest, the first on a natural rock face in the eastern U.S. since the population crashed. Since then, state agencies and New Hampshire Audubon have worked with rock climbing groups to decide when to close cliffs in the summer. Rock climbing biologists and volunteers have a unique role to play. They venture up to remote falcon nests to fit metal ID bands on the legs of peregrine chicks, helping scientists track the peregrine falcon's recovery. Climbers continue to enjoy the granite cliffs of New Hampshire, and they've helped ensure they're not alone on the mountain. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
In Davilawan, I'm Sabrina Spencer with The Journey Continues, highlighting local stories that matter to you. The initialing of the Kitsum-Kalum Treaty on June 25th marks a significant milestone in the relationship between Kitsum-Kalum First Nations, the Government of Canada, and the Government of British Columbia. This treaty, influenced by principles from UNDRIP, focuses on preserving Kitsum-Kalum's culture and spiritual practices while advancing their autonomy. CFNR was on location for the initialing and later spoke with Melissa Quackster, Communications and Community Engagement Consultant.
It's Melissa Quackster. I'm a member of the Comox First Nation, and I work with Kitsum-Kalum as a Communications and Community Engagement Consultant.
Okay, so how will Kitsum-Kalum ensure that the treaty respects and supports the community's cultural traditions, language, and spiritual practices?
Good question. Kitsum-Kalum will support communities' cultural traditions, languages, and spiritual practices through their culture and heritage chapter, which is embedded with the governance chapter. It is also protected in the Kitsum-Kalum Constitution that they will always be able to practice, promote, and preserve their culture, languages, and spiritual practices. And that will happen with the guidance and direction of the Kitsum-Kalum people, hereditary chiefs, and spiritual leaders.
Can you outline Kitsum-Kalum's approach to ensuring fair and equitable representation of all community members in decision-making processes post-treaty?
Absolutely. Kitsum-Kalum will ensure fair and equitable representation of all community members in decision-making processes post-treaty through a forum that we are calling the People's Assembly, the Kitsum-Kalum People's Assembly. So a minimum of once a year, there needs to be an assembly held where the Kitsum-Kalum government needs to present strategic plans, budgets, and any legislative pieces that need to be discussed on the floor. During that time, they will integrate and include feedback on any of these issues from the people. And the way the organization structure will work is, instead of having the council or executive or legislature at the top, it's actually Kitsamkalem members at the top, and they direct the government of Kitsamkalem. So it's not BC and Canada sort of dictating your leadership anymore. It's now the people who dictate. And if the leadership does not follow the guidance and direction of the people, then that will show in the following elections.
All right. So what opportunities does Kitsamkalem foresee for youth involvement and leadership development within the new governance structures established by the treaty?
Kitsamkalem foresees youth involvement and leadership and development within the new governance structures established by the treaty through a number of ways. We've discussed having elder representation on committees that inform or direct, provide direction or information to the legislature or the administrative executive folks in the government structure. We have also at this time been, or in the past summer and this upcoming summer, looking at having some summer students take part in the work we do inside in communications and other Kitsamkalem work. Other than that, we have, our door is always open to youth. We do utilize social media such as Instagram and Facebook, mostly Instagram, to try and entice young people to take a look. It is very hard to connect with youth today, and we need to find their level of understanding. At the end of the day, all of this is for them.
What are the provisions in the treaty that support Kitsamkalem's aspirations for self-governance and autonomy over local affairs?
Provisions in the treaty that support Kitsamkalem's aspirations for self-government and autonomy, it's spelled out in the governance chapters, several governance chapters that speak to this, as well as there are, I would say what it comes down to is Kitsamkalem under the treaty becomes a third order of government along with BC and Canada. They are more than a municipality, have more powers and more authority. However, that doesn't give Kitsamkalem any authority over local governments, but an equal standing where they can work together for the betterment of all, everybody who lives in the Terrace area and the Kitsamkalem territory.
So how has Kitsamkalem engaged with local municipalities and regional governments to ensure alignment and cooperation on shared priorities post-treaty?
Kitsamkalem has engaged with local municipalities and regional governments over the last several years. We have had representatives from the regions or at the City of Terrace sitting at the treaty table over several years, so they have been sort of a part of it and a bit of a liaise with the rest of the local government there. And they have been in support, and over the past few years, as Kitsamkalem and the local governments have been getting to know each other, the relationship has been growing stronger. In addition, BC and Canada absolutely have a obligation and a duty to consult with their local governments as well. And Kitsamkalem has been participating as part of the team in those consultations with local government to ensure that they are aware of the process and where we're going, and answering any other questions.
And then the last question, what measures are in place within the treaty to enhance healthcare, education, social services for Kitsamkalem members, particularly vulnerable populations?
Excellent question. So the measures that are in place within the treaty to enhance healthcare, education, and social services for Kitsamkalem members, including vulnerable populations, include the negotiations around existing programs and services to continue to start. Over time, as Kitsamkalem builds wealth, they will be able to add in and build programs and services for both folks who live within the territory and outside the territory to try and create equity amongst all the people and a higher quality of life for Kitsamkalem members. To do that, we have ensured that all those programs and services that are in place now will continue and be enhanced in certain areas. In addition to that, modern treaty nations that are already in existence are in a separate set of negotiations to increase the programs and services within their own nations. When those negotiations, as those negotiations are completed, we will be able to incorporate them into the Kitsum-Kalem Treaty, where that will increase the amount for programs and services for Kitsum-Kalem people over the next several years.
This story is brought to you in partnership with the Local Journalism Initiative of Canada. You can see the full story at frequencynews.ca. In Dawaloan, I'm Sabrina Spencer with The Journey Continues, highlighting local stories that matter to you. Chief Glenn Bennett of the Kitsilas First Nations, joined by Federal Minister Gary Anadanaskri and BC Minister Murray Rankin, marked a significant moment on June 24th with the initialing of the Kitsilas Treaty. The treaty, which will undergo a ratification process, promises to recognize Kitsilas' right to governance, land ownership, and resource management in alignment with UNDRIP and provincial legislation. Chief Bennett, along with Cyril Bennett-Nabes, spoke with CFNR. They mentioned anticipated benefits, including improved community services and economic opportunities, reflecting Kitsilas' vision for future generations. Chief Bennett says they are aiming for treaty ratification by spring of 2025.
Over 30 years we've been in this process. Originally, we started out under the Tsimshian Tribal Council, then that organization was dissolved, and then we became part of what is now known as the TFN Treaty Society.
How does Kitsilas plan to ensure that the rights of all community members, including the elders and youth, are respected and protected under the new governance framework?
So, leading up to today, the initialing, we've consulted with the elders on every step of the way. So we have meetings with the elders to hear from them. If they have any suggestions or concerns, that's where we listen to our elders.
Can you elaborate on the consultation process with neighboring First Nations during the negotiation of the treaty and how their input has been incorporated?
So we've started that process. We've met with Kikapla on two occasions, once in their village. Our delegation traveled to Kikapla, present what we have been negotiating, hear any concerns they may have. They've come to Kitsilas. We've met with them here. Likewise, with the Haisla, we've had three meetings with the Haisla. And same thing, if they have any concerns, we try and address it at that table. We've met with the Nisga Nation on, I believe, two occasions with President Clayton and some of our other delegations. We've extended the invitation to meet with Lhkhloams. No response to four of our invitations that we've sent to them. So the door is still open. We're willing to listen to them. I think their concerns, from what I see in the media, is with BC and Canada. That's where they have a concern. But our process will continue to be an open process where we're more than willing to sit down with Lhkhloams and their nine allied tribes.
What are the key environmental protections and sustainability measures included in the treaty to safeguard natural resources in Kitsilas traditional territory?
Very good question. A treaty does not just speak to individual rights of Kitsilas citizens, but it also speaks to the future power of the Kitsilas government with regard to the natural resources, the finances, not only the finances, but also our citizenship. After the potential effective date, Kitsilas will have lawmaking authorities to define the way in which the land is used, to define the way in which water is allocated, to define the way in which citizenship is provided to what is today our membership.
And how will the proposed treaty impact traditional land use practice and cultural heritage preservation within the Kitsilas territory?
So in the treaty, there is contemplated joint management areas in which Not only the province and the federal government, but also Kitsilas will actively play a management role around the planning, the pre-planning, and the future development of these areas within the territory. So areas like the areas that surround Kitsilas IR1, from Kitsilas Mountain to Bornai Mountain, or more in particular, the Clianza Estuary, the Clianza Watershed.
What are the anticipated benefits of the treaty for future generations of Kitsilas members, and how will the community ensure intergenerational equity?
So we plan to give back to the community. We've already started it. The late Mel Bevan, seeing what some other First Nations were doing in creating a Kitsilas-only pension plan to our elders who are 65 and older. It's a small amount, but it's a start. We provide them $200 a month. Everyone that turns 65 will automatically be enrolled. The amount of land that we're looking at for treaty settlement lands is very vast. I hear from people that come and see what we're doing. They tell me that they're very impressed that we have, in my mind, a significant amount of treaty settlement lands. We have lands up at the airport that were partners with the city of Terrace. I can only see that getting better. Widening. And so we own the lands that are adjacent to IR1, between IR1 and Highway 16. Those lands belong to us. And so we're looking at future development, be it a convenience store, gas bar, anything that the community wishes to put forward. We have a plan that was developed by the community, and we're certainly willing to follow what they see envisioned for Kitsilas.
And will the treaty impact healthcare, education, and social services within the Kitsilas community?
I can see it only benefiting, getting better, more funding that we can provide to our community for healthcare, education, that will increase. So certainly there is benefits, and it can only get better. We're going to, triple the funding that we receive from the federal government and the province for health care. That's important to our people, so we want to ensure that there's sufficient funding available for our elders. You see it in our 40 units. 10 units are designated for elders. So it's in my mind that that's an improvement. Our elders can live in the community, be close to their family, so we'll continue that type of development.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to share or add at all today?
Well, thank you for giving me an opportunity to share what we're trying to accomplish under this treaty, and we look forward to hopefully ratifying our treaty in the spring of 2025.
This story is brought to you in partnership with the Local Journalism Initiative of Canada. You can see the full story at frequencynews.ca.
Element FM, and I'm Vanessa Landrieu. Today's July 2nd, and here's your Element News Brief. The long weekend was a busy week for the Ottawa Police, with a robbery and two shootings taking place, the latter resulting in the death of a 19-year-old man, according to an Ottawa Police press release. The two shootings occurred on different days. The death of the 19-year-old, identified as Youssef Salaman by Ottawa Police, occurred at roughly 10 p.m. June 28th on Russell Road near Carlsbad Springs. Element FM attempted to contact the Ottawa Police for more information, but received no response. The investigation is currently ongoing, and more information is to come as the investigation unfolds. As well, over the weekend, Ottawa Police have placed charges on an individual for a hate crime that took place approximately a year ago. Ottawa Police released a statement on their website naming the victim, Zachary Smith, a 26-year-old man. He's received charges for mischief and damage to property, making threats of death, injury and property, and harassment towards others. The crime took place near Rideau last year, and the West Criminal Investigation Section and the Hate and Bias Crime Unit started an investigation that led up to today's charges. Zachary Smith is supposed to appear in court later today. The federal government has announced that 10 Indigenous-led projects in the North will receive a portion of $1.4 million. The announcement was made by Minister Dan Bandel of Northern Affairs, the Canadian Northern Economic Development Agency, and the Prairies Economic Development Agency of Canada on June 27th. The Canadian Northern Economic Development Agency, also known as CANNOR, is investing $1.4 million towards these projects. The government has also released where projects are being funded are located. Four of these projects will be in Nunavut, four will be located in Yukon, and the last two will be in the Northern Territories. The federal government has explained on their website, Canada.ca, that the funding will help Indigenous-led businesses and organizations to, quote, build new programs, increase their efficiency by bringing services online, purchase modern equipment, and expand and upgrade their capacity and infrastructure, unquote. As well, Minister Vandel stated during his announcement that this economic reconciliation is integral to building strong economies in the north of Canada. He said, quote, our government is working alongside Indigenous businesses and organizations to seize opportunities, create jobs, and grow the local economies. These projects provide essential revenue streams needed to create meaningful economic benefit to communities and support a more prosperous future for Northerners. This information has been made possible by the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm Vanessa Landrieu, and to hear more stories like this in the Ottawa region, tune into our radio station 95.7 Element FM, Ottawa's Indigenous Beat. Indigenous Beat.
Sitting at home with all these words spinning around in your head. Or in agony all night while you're commiserating with your friends. This ain't no mystery. Oh, baby, can't you see? You show me you, and I'll show you.
I'm DJ Coco.
And I'm DJ Star.
Come join us for Slumber Party, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
You'll hear female artists, oversharing, and research on health, psychology, and identity.
Hope to see you there.
Interested in joining improv sessions? Four seasoned facilitators are holding an event involving climate change on July 12th between 7 and 9 p.m. All experience levels are welcome and light snacks will be provided as well. The event takes place at Moberly Arts and Cultural Center with a performance at the end of the show. For more info and to RSVP, you can find them on Instagram at instagram.com/ginsolostalgia.
Do you like music, or do you like technology, or do you like talking to people? CGSF Radio is the place for you. Here at CGSF, the opportunities are endless. You can interview artists and bands, speak up for what you believe in, or even host your own show, and tons more. To find out more information, visit cgsf.ca.